Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part 2, Faculty of Social Science. Now, the next character is Lady Macbeth. Lady Macbeth's significance in Shakespeare's Macbeth is second to none, not even to Macbeth himself. The views of the critics about her characters are not only different but at times opposite. While Dr. Johnson dismisses her with the terse observation, merely detestable, and Campbell agrees. Coleridge observes, she envisages no womanly feeling, no wifely joy at the return of her husband. Murdered King Duncan's eldest son, Malcolm calls her the friend-like queen, and his hatred for her is genuine and understandable. Most of the critics are guided by Dr. Johnson and Coleridge and fail to see any redeeming feature in her character, and even went to the extent of labeling her as the fourth witch in Macbeth. But there are others who could discern some virtue in her and viewed her with sympathy and sentimentalized her character. Dr. Bucknell regarded her as beautiful and delicate. Mrs. Jameson discovers in her no want of wifely and or womanly respect and love. She regards her as essentially a woman with all the dearest feminine attributes and graces, who steals herself to wickedness and horror out of love for her dear husband. No doubt these are extreme views, and to arrive at truth for a fair estimate of her character, we have a look for the truth somewhere midway between these. She is neither so friendish and unwomanly nor so tender, delicate and adorable. To describe Lady Macbeth as a sea monster is as incorrect as dismissing Macbeth as a foul villain. Malcolm's hatred is justified, but Shakespeare's The Dramatist conceived her as a woman with a very strong will, as her husband is endowed with a very strong imagination. Like her husband, Lady Macbeth is also overambitious and is single-minded in realizing her and her husband's ambition. She is entirely devoted to her husband. It is for her husband that she suppresses her conscience and womanliness by a deliberate act of her will. She wishes him to be as great in reality as he is in his capacities and potentialities. In this respect, we may say that hers is a wholly unselfish ambition. She is so devoted to her husband that she does all she could to make his ambition a reality. She helps him in every way. When Macbeth decided not to proceed in their plan to murder King Duncan, she goads him to do the deed. But when the deed was done and Macbeth was crowned the King of Scotland, she did not wish him to proceed on the path of evil, but she did not misforsake him, although she did not like him to do bloody deeds anymore. But Macbeth had gone so far that it was not possible for him to retreat, and he had no time for his wife, whose conscience and senses of loneliness were killing her. In this respect, we may safely infer that she was neither friendish nor heartless. She was sick at heart and needed the love of her husband, who had gone too far from her. True, in the first crime which she imposed upon her husband, she was pitiless and unrelenting. She was so charged that she was even prepared to kill Duncan herself, and she evoked the evil powers Come Thick Night and Paul Dee in the dunnest smoke of hell. That making knife seen, not the wound it makes. She even prays that she may be unsexed, that her women's breast be filled with the gall in place of milk. She advised her husband to look innocent and leave the rest to her. She was confident of herself. When Macbeth hesitated, she chided him and appealed to his manliness and love of her. It is here that she impresses us as the most powerful woman, gifted with the unity of purpose. To her, and was all the means nothing. That end was the crown of Scotland, and she succeeded, but she was not happy because the crown was gemmed with blood drops. From here, the reaction to her unnatural concentrations of will began to work, and her nerves gave way. But she kept her nerves in control in company, but when she was left alone, that reaction started to work. Lady Macbeth was left alone for the best part of the play. After the first murder of King Dungan, she presided over the banquet at which Macbeth saw the ghost of Banquo. She behaved queenly and managed the show quite well. She saved an ugly situation by her self-control and superb hypocrisy. So far as the outer world was concerned, she never once lost her presence of mind. She was very inch a queen. Her nerves gave way in the last act. She wilted under the weight of remorse. She became an invalid and was assigned to the care of a nurse and a doctor. Her dear husband had no time for her. The agony of remorse was mercifully broken by insanity, which was reflected in her walking and talking in sleep. In fact, she never woke to the realities of life after the royal banquet. She only woke to talk in a state of somnambulism. The guilt of murder lay heavily on her soul. She brooded over it and became mad. She talked of nothing but of blood, which seemed to stick to her little hand, which she pathetically kept on washing. The smell of blood persisted, and all the perfumes of Arabia would not sweeten that little hand. Lady Macbeth has not a fiend or a murderer. She only played the part of a fiend deliberately for procuring the crown for her husband, and was visited by remorse and revulsion. Lady Macbeth, who preserved the secret of murder in the conscious state in the most trying circumstances, now stood self-accused and self-confessed. That was the measure of her punishment from conscience, which she had suppressed by an act of will. She died in a fit of insanity at her own hands. It was a merciful death which relieved her of her misery and agony. She had a very affectionate heart, and she once observed, "Had he not resembled my father as he slept, I had done it." Lady Macbeth is to be pitied, not to be accused and despised. Her innate tenderness was deliberately suppressed, but it refused to be suppressed. Lady Macbeth excited our terror as well as our pity. Terror was writ large on her indomitable inflexibility of will. It impressed us in that dreadful night of Duncan's murder, as she came before us, goading her husband, arranging the daggers, smearing the faces of the groom with blood, and dismissing her husband fear as those of a child. That one murder was her first and last, and was enough to upset her nerves. The consequent remorse that she suffered was pitiful. Her tight-lipped endurance was sublime. She never sought relief in any form. She faced her suffering alone, and for a woman this was exceptional. She did everything for her dear husband, stood like a rock to defend him, and her greatest tragedy was that she was deserted by the same husband when she needed him most. The study of the characters of Macbeth and Lady Macbeth in comparison and contrast makes an interesting and illuminating study worth undertaking. But we shall undertake this task separately, as it needs greatly greater attention and effort. Thank you.